After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Hi, everyone. This is Raghu Marcus. This is Mind Rolling. And unfortunately, I'm sad to say that my erstwhile partner, David Silver, is like way under the weather. So this is going to be a big hole in our podcast life. But we're going to get through it. And David's going to get better. He's just got a vicious flu and can't talk, which is not good if you're doing a podcast. So here's what we're doing, and I'm about to introduce it, or I am introducing it, which is a few weeks ago, we were in Maui at this spring retreat with Ram Dass and Krishnas. We've mentioned it, I believe, on the last podcast. And Roshi Joan Halifax and Duncan Trussell was also with us. We did a session with Ram Dass that'll be released soon in the next couple of months. And so we did this great thing with Duncan, and then we invited up our good friend Jared Levy, also known as Gagen Baba, who is a family member and part of our team at Love Serve. And we'll tell you more about him. If you've listened to any Sharon Salzberg podcast on MindPod Network, we did a great one with him around purpose. So this, and not to be forgotten, because I'd be dead. And that is my wonderful Saraswati. I keep saying the beautiful Saraswati, which she is, but now it's the wonderful Saraswati, was also teaching yoga. She teaches the yoga at the retreat. So she happened to be there, and I just like called her out of the audience to lend her wisdom, the wisdom of Saraswati, the goddess. So this is, nothing can ever replace David Silver. Nothing. Okay? And I miss just doing this and hanging out with him. It's like one of the things I look forward to every week. And so this is, I think it'll be a pretty good replacement, though. I think we did there's some interesting things in it. We talked about relationship to the guru, the people who had met Neem Karoli Baba Maharaji in India all those years ago, and people who were just sort of finding out about it all in the last number of years, or even 10 or 20, and their relationship to what that is. And I'm going to say one thing that's going to just be the my note before I play the podcast, or we play the podcast, and that is just a little story, and it's from Lama Surya Das, who is also on MindPod Network, by the way, and it is about the first time he met Neem Karoli Baba, and he was in a very close family member's house, and he came for the first time, 20 years old. He was really into meditation. he came in and they said, well, Maharaji's not here. He's in the back in his room, but you can just sit where he usually sit in front of where he usually sits on this bench. It's called a tucket. And so he did so. And he deeply experienced that presence, which we call Neem Karoli Baba, after not meeting him at all. And then suddenly someone taps him on the shoulder and says, okay, he's ready to see you. So he goes in the back and there is the physical Maharaji. And he has this whole incredible darshan presence of Maharaji in a way that was, you can't say it was diminished from his experience alone in the living room, just meditating and completely being in the presence of what that thing really is. It's a silly thing to say, that thing, but it is. It is a that we cannot explain. And then suddenly he's in this playful, in with this playful personality known as Neem Karoli Baba. And that playful personality he called the little Maharaji. And the big Maharaji was what he experienced in deeper meditative space before he met the physical. So that gives you a little bit of a clue as to what that reality is and why people who have never met him, that physical thing is not a barrier whatsoever. And I've known so many people to be this case, literally hundreds, I would say. So that is a bit of the, gets into a real discussion around this. And of course, Duncan is his usual funny, self-deprecating self. And we love him. And he, at the end, okay, stuff comes out of him, okay, that belies his, his own view of himself, let's put it that way. And at the very end, stick it out to the end of this. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but he comes up with a window on a reality that, to me, in my little light, is very, very apt. He got it, I thought. So here we go. Oh, and nothing about... See, David's not here. We can't get his sister, Bernadine, to do anything to help us along here with the support for mindrollingpodcast.com or MindPod Network with all of our wonderful family, Ram Das and Lama Surya Das and Krishna Das and Jack Kornfield and Sharon Salzberg, and we've got Chris Grasso, we got Michael Donahue and Tara Brock. Now it's just expanding, and we folks are going to do a crowdfunding to handle the incredible growth here. There's over 100,000 of you just joining us here every month and downloading and streaming all these different podcasts and taking advantage of these beautiful wisdom pieces that we are sourcing and curating on the site. And there's going to be more to come, because what we want to do is with this crowdfunding, aside from the expansion which needs people, we want to create a new app that'll be a hub, a self-contained ecosystem. All right, where all of this stuff is going to be available and more pushes to your daily on your phone. You'll be able to use a meditation timer. There'll be a push of a different meditation that you can do, or you can choose from. There'll be online courses. There'll be words of something special. Is it gonna be? So this is Raghu Marcus. We thank you for your support. Please look out for that crowdfunding. It's on Indiegogo, May 29th. And please continue to talk to us. And you've been sharing, and it's just phenomenal to hear people's different takes on the MindPod Network. We will see you back with Dave next week. Meanwhile, here is myself, Duncan Gagan Baba, also known as Jared Levy and Saraswati. Mind rolling.
So we agreed to do this because Mike asked us to do this, actually. And we've been doing a bunch of podcasts in the background, sort of, well, a couple, right? With Krishnadas and Roshi that are going to be pretty interesting. And so we've just been grinding it out here day after day. Right?
Yeah, it's such a grind. I mean, oh, God, horrible. The talking, you know, it's so difficult to get your vocal cords to articulate sounds.
Well, no, but some of the subject matter has been a little bit gravitas.
Heavy. It's been heavy. It has been intense. And whenever I come to these things, I forget that there is this strange intensity that honestly you feel so weirdly high by day three that you start, the skeptical part of me starts thinking, are these guys putting something in the chai? Because there's this weird buzz that starts happening. What's the cult thing
we were talking about?
Yes, with Krishnadas.
Yeah.
I asked them about because we were doing this we did a podcast with Krishnadas, and of course a lot of talk about Maharaji, and so I had to get them to explain to the listeners how this wasn't how he wasn't a cult leader, which I think is a really important thing to help people with, because a lot of people, when you go back to the world and you talk about, well, you know, it's about this guy in a blanket who has magical powers, and they're gonna be like, okay, Scientologist.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, he gave a good explanation of that, though. What's the difference, right?
Well,
we'll post it on our bulletin board so that.
No, it was great. The explanation, of course, was this is a dark thing to start this off on, by the way. I didn't mean to go
here. I wonder
why. But the explanation was great, which was that, and it's an interesting explanation, that Maharaji died without a bank account and owned nothing. And then when you go back and look at the videos, of course, and you guys probably already know this, but when you go and look at the stories, he really was living like a beggar. He had nothing except that blanket, and that was it. It's really fascinating.
The water pot. He had a water pot?
I didn't know he had a water pot.
And some chimtas, which are fire tongs. That was from his, you know, early in his life, where he was sitting around fire. And the blanket. He had the blanket. So that was it. But it was more about he didn't want anything from any. There was no even dialogue, never mind asking for. I mean, he did ask Ram Dass for his for the Land Rover, of course.
Right. Which is when you read about him. You know, I just started. What was the book? The By His Grace.
Oh yeah, that's what.
So
we're
I've
talking
been reading
about.
This book. For those of you, a lot of you guys, especially who came in from the podcast, maybe don't know a ton of the stories. You just hear the Ram Dass story, and that's it. But this book is really good, and it was really funny to me because the chapter I opened up to. It's written by his translator, one of his main translators. And the translator...
Wait, Dada Mukherjee, and we can't call him a translator. He is like one of the closest people to Maharaji, and he was the most selfless person I ever met, Maharaji not counting, because he wasn't really... So Dada was... the way that he brought us into his family was extraordinary. So, yeah,
So he's more than a translator. He's an amazing human. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Jesus.
So
you're going to hell. I know it.
So, thanks. The chapter I opened up to is really funny because he said that the Westerners, Ram Dass, probably you, would complain because he wasn't fully translating everything that Maharaji said. And he said the reason he wasn't doing that is because he didn't know how to translate the insults.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hilarious to me. To think that, you know, because there's this side to him that I don't... there's a real trickster side to him that comes out in that book that I wasn't quite aware of. And there's another side to him that's really interesting that comes out in that book, which was... And you guys do talk about this, but... He really did. It seems like he really did just want to wander. He wanted to wander around. He was such a free spirit that he didn't like being in any one place for any given amount of time.
not more than 3 days until maybe 7 or 8 years before he left that body. Then were the ashrams built and all that, like in the 60s. So maybe, you know, so 10 years or so, 10, 12 years. So yeah, he used to wander around and just take meals wherever anybody offered him, which is why he got so huge, because people were feeding him like 12 meals a night. So he'd be eating all that. But I asked Duncan, so you read this book. Who knows this book, first of all, in this audience? Dada Mukherjee, By His Grace. This is what, maybe 10, 15%? You weren't looking.
I was looking. I saw it. I wasn't able to do it. Sorry, I couldn't do an immediate calculation. I'm not the Terminator.
I like doing those kind of exercises, walking around. How many people are in the room? Yeah. Okay, so, but these, to me, Dada's book is, if you really want to get a feeling about Maharaji, Dada's book, By His Grace and The Near and the Dear. There's two of them. The first is kind of his direct story, and the second is stories he collected of the other very close devotees, including K.C. Tiwari, who you heard Krishnadas talk about yesterday. So it's still open. So after this thing, get Dada's book if you really want to know. And in it, I was saying, he said he read part of the book. So I go, did you read the part of what happened when he first met Maharaj? No, I skipped through the book. So you miss the most important thing in the book.
What is that?
He was a student. I'll just tell this quick. He doesn't even like these stories, by the way. Whenever he said, I don't like you telling stories about Maharaji.
You're literally going to throw me under the bus in front of a picture of Maharaji at a retreat about Maharaji. Thanks, Raghu.
It's from mind rolling. I'm used to David. He doesn't mind.
Well, can I defend myself?
Yes.
Before you talk? So it's not I don't like the stories. I think the stories are really interesting and beautiful, and I take a lot from the stories, but sometimes it feels a lot like when somebody tells you, oh man, I took the best acid last week. It was such a good trip. Do you have any more of that acid? Oh no, it's gone. It's in the same way. It feels like you guys now. It's a weird way to explain it.
Wow.
In the same way, it's like, okay, I get it. You guys got to hang around this being that was possibly channeling Hanuman, maybe an incarnation of Hanuman. Who knows what Hanuman even is? But you got to be around this being. And I do understand that we get to be around that being in a kind of in the gestalt, which is the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So when all of us gather together here with you,
two or more in my name.
Yes.
Kind of
then we get to feel this very specific energy that only happens at these retreats. And you, okay. Thank you for saying that. You're right. But for me, I experience it here more than most other places. But you are absolutely right. It doesn't just happen here. If it did, then we'd be in trouble. But so I get that. So and I love the story. So it wasn't like, you know, it's. And but then aside from the skeptical part of my mind that kicks in whenever you're telling the stories, which goes crazy, I love them. But what I love more than the stories is the method. I love when Ram Dass talks about the levels of consciousness, and I love the guided meditations, and those things appeal to me. But that doesn't mean that the stories are terrible. It probably just means that I'm too dumb to harvest the energy I'm supposed to from those stories. But I love the actual direction. You know, which it's tough to get because he didn't give a lot of direction. But I do love the specific, like, there are several levels of consciousness. We are a soul. You can be a soul or you can be an ego, and you get to decide which. That stuff makes my brain explode a lot more than the stories, though I think the stories are really cool.
I'm going to try one, though.
Let's hear it.
Because and it's going to go full circle to what this thing really is. And it's from this book. So Dada was a student and living in what's now Bangladesh. And his mother and his aunt were very, very great devotees of God. And in this case, I think the mother. So they sent him to Dakshineshwar, which is where a saint named Sri Ramakrishna had his temple, Tukali. And he went there and doing his duty, that kind of a thing. And he's in the courtyard there one day, and a sadhu comes up to him and says, I want to give you a mantra. And Dada thinks to himself, who was not particularly religious, oh, God, all right, I'll do it just because of respect for my family. So he took the mantra, which he was supposed to repeat every time he took a bath. Right, so it was a natural thing that he would obviously remember to do every day. He did it. This is, I don't know exactly, I think it's around 1930, okay? Eventually, he became a professor of economics at Allahabad University. Still kind of semi-worldly. Got married, was living in Allahabad, where the Ganga and the Yamuna and the Saraswati meet. His wife said, oh, there's a saint nearby. We should pop over there and, you know, just out of respect. And it, one thing to, led to another. He got over there. He goes in the house. And the saint says to him, are you still doing the mantra? It was Maharaji. And he said, now I'm coming to your house. And he went over and he started living at Dada's house and giving darshan eventually to us, the Westerners who came here. So that was the and he had many miracles like that, or even greater. I mean, Maharaji took him literally flying around the Kenchi Valley in the form of Hanuman. I mean, really stuff that you would never, ever. I mean, if Dada told you, you'd go. You'd fully grok it because it just couldn't be any, not a, a fib would ever come out of his mouth. He came to America. And he met lots of, you know, we'd have kirtans and Krishnadas and I and all the people. And we'd have kirtans and they'd all come. And he'd meet all these people he never met in India. And he said, I've had the greatest miracles done on me by Maharaji. But the greatest miracle I ever saw was being with people who never met him that are as connected to him as I am. And that was, I don't know, in the early 80s or something. This has gone on for decades, and this is really part of what has been happening to us, and I mean the big us, where there's absolutely no necessity to have seen that body or being involved in any kind of physical way. And Dada noted that at this time, and now this is, you know, a manifestation of that. So that's a...
Yeah,
you
I
like
do.
That story?
I love it. And I think that I do. I think there's, you know, a lot of you guys just came because of my podcast. Some of you here came. And that's mind-blowing to me that, for one, that you had the guts to do it. And it's really incredible. It's really incredible to think about that. But, yeah, I do recognize, and this is something I think is really important that I've learned from you guys, is to find the miracle in the moment, in the now, because that miracle seems to hide out in the present moment, you know. And if you're spending time looking around for it, for the magic thing to happen, you know. Actually, in that book, as I was skimming through, another thing that I read. Now I'm telling Maharaji stories. This is terrible. There's no escape. The thing that I read that I thought was really incredible was so he's saying that people always wanted to come and have darshan with Maharaji, and some people, for whatever reason, it never happened. They would never get in his presence. And so he would try to bring them, he would try to arrange meetings for these people who were probably really frustrated that they didn't get to meet him.
Yeah.
And he said he wouldn't see them, and some couple or some group, he wouldn't see them. And he said, you know, they don't want my darshan. They don't want to be in my presence. They want to see the magic tricks they've heard I can do. Mm. And I thought that was so cool because there's such a pull in the direction of magic. Like, you want to see this incredible miracle. You want to see whatever it is, you know? And looking around for that miracle, it's so easy to miss what actually happened, which is that we all got in flying tubes that carried us across the ocean to this place. And a lot of us, the way we arranged or organized getting here was by using the most advanced technology on the planet, the internet, to organize. And also the fact that this is being streamed to the internet and the entire planet instantaneously, that honestly, it makes flying around with a levitating monkey
seem like nothing.
Seem like, no, I was going to say seem like nothing. That's still pretty cool. Fly around with a monkey. But it's like three down from that. It's like four down from that.
Yeah, that's true. So here we are. This is the last talking kind of session, because Krishnadas is going to do his thing tonight, although he might say a few words. He usually tries to reassure people who are starting to think about, oh my God, I'm going back now, and you know what's going to happen. But so this is a little bit of, can you give us some sort of review of your weekend?
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean,
What, because we, Roshan came up with the Cultivating the Courage to Love, right?
Yes.
And then I work with her, and then I put a bunch of stuff together, and that's, you know, kind of facilitated some of these sessions around that to really flesh out what you're talking about, yes. Which is given some tools, that's what you're talking about, to even think about this stuff or actually practice. So what, amongst all of the courage cultivation stuff, did you get? Did it ring any bell?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, my favorite, there's two cool things I took away. I mean, it took a lot. Taking away something, it's that, that's what the ego wants. It's like, oh, this is what I took away from this incredible thing, and I'll put it in my bank account and save it. A couple of things I learned. One of them in the interview I did with Krishnadas, I was asking him about the very interesting sad feeling that seems to happen in the midst of these retreats for me, where somehow in the midst of feeling all this love and all this connection and so many different people opening up and seeing people randomly crying and I will randomly cry, or people actively fighting back crying, which is kind of cool. You run into a lot of people who, I've run into three people who are like, I'm not going to cry. I want to cry, but I'm not going to do it, which is really cool. That's a teaching too. You know, if you're fighting back against crying, then you're getting one of the great lessons. That was one of the first lessons I got when I came here. Yeah. Was like, my God, I'm constantly desperately trying to fight against weeping or against opening up. And that's a really funny. That's like one of the stupidest battles of all time. Like, fighting against love is one of the funniest wrestling matches to get in. And you realize the courage to love. So yeah, that was a couple of retreats ago where I came and just realized that 80% of my life was dedicated to boxing back anyone trying to express affection or sweetness or love to me. And when you come to this place, the shocking thing is that everyone's doing that to you. So you get back to your room and you're exhausted. Like, God, I wish they just stopped trying to love me it's so annoying. Do they not realize what an awful person I am?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And then you realize, oh, well, I'm in a war where my winning means me being without love in my life. And surrender means being completely embraced in the most sweet way by some very beautiful people. So that's something I've taken away from these retreats. But from this retreat, when I asked Krishnadas about what is this sadness that goes along with this, I was talking to someone at breakfast and they were saying how it was beautiful, but how sad they felt because for the first 50 years of their life, they hadn't known about this kind of thing. And there was a kind of sadness that they felt in relation to that. And I feel that sadness when I think, oh, man, if only I had started this practice before my mom died. Oh, man, if only I'd pulled that off. Because so much of my interaction with her was from an ego place and was not from the place that she deserved, you know. But you can't get caught up in that, but there's a sadness, you know. And so Krishnadas said, that sadness, that bittersweet feeling is actually the feeling of your heart. The longing of your heart drawing you in. It's the feeling of your heart throwing a tractor beam up and pulling your attention into that open-hearted place. So I never knew that's what it was. And I thought that was pretty cool. And then the other thing that I really liked was Roshi Joan talking about radical insecurity. Because that feeling of insecurity, you know, that you're always trying to fix, that feeling of insecurity that where you'll find yourself in your girlfriend's emails. You know, that thing, that's what it does. That feeling of insecurity draws you to do the dumbest, most ridiculous, sad things because you want the feeling to end so much, that feeling of not knowing, you know? So when she was saying, oh, that feeling of not knowing is actually the place to hang out in, that was a big moment for me because, you know, I've had... And by the way, sorry if I'm doing a grocery list of my troubles. I feel really happy right now. But I've had cancer and I've had to go through waiting for test results for days, for days. I don't know if anybody here has gone through. I'm sure lots of you have gone through that. But that experience of every single day looking at your phone, waiting for this number to come up that you know is your doctor. And he might tell you, I'm really sorry, we're going to have to start chemo or we're going to have to, or who knows, something even worse. Holy God, that is the most intense feeling that I know of, the most incredible, uncomfortable, scary, brutal feeling that there is. And I have spent most of my life trying to avoid that feeling at all costs. So it was a big moment when she pointed out that this is not a thing to avoid, but is sort of the doorway to awakening. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Those two things related to courage, self-honesty, self-reflection, that's number one. And then making friends with the mystery. And like she uses the mystery sometimes, and I love that. So that there isn't a fear of free falling.
Because we're free falling.
Yeah.
This is something I've thought about before, and I probably can't talk about this up here.
Is it that bad?
Well, kind of, because like if you, well, it's just a little...
Scatological or something?
Not scatological, but it's like we get exploded out of a vagina into infinity.
Oh, that's a terrible thing to say.
I'm sorry. Yeah. But it's true. If you think about it, babies are pushed in this... Have you ever seen a video of somebody parachuting and they're freaking out and somebody's got to push them out of the plane and then they go falling down and they're freaking out? Well, that's what we're doing to babies every second, except we're pushing them without a parachute into infinity. And so
I never thought of it that way, actually.
Well, it's true. Maharaji used to say that. I read it somewhere. But if you think about that, how we're all plummeting in the direction of infinity, complete oblivion, the singularity called death, maybe it's a phase shift, maybe it's not. We don't know what it is. It's the definition of a singularity. We don't know what's past it. We don't know what happens. But we're all falling in the direction of that singularity. And as we're falling, we all sort of start doing these very strange things to avoid the fact that we're falling. And that to me is really funny because huge clusters of us, as we're plummeting into oblivion, put on business suits and get in our car and drive to work and think this is completely normal. It's you're plunging into oblivion and you're wearing a necktie? Are you serious? You're plunging into the void and you feel completely normal being in gridlock traffic, going to a place that you hate to make money to support a life you don't like. And that's a pretty incredible thing because I think all of those behaviors are coming directly from the inability to turn and face that thing that you guys and Roshi are trying to push us in the direction of. And it's pretty cool.
Ram Dass does this great thing on identity, just what you're talking about, and he uses the spacesuit as an analogy. It's a beautiful talk. I'm going to talk about that actually later before Krishna Das comes on, because it's something that we're doing at the foundation that I think people will love. I want to switch gears here a little bit.
I don't blame you.
I would like to invite a member of the audience up here.
Great.
Gagan Baba, come on up. Jared Levy, Gagan. Jared Gagan and his wife Jyoti, also named Jocelyn, accompanied me to India a couple of years ago, and they met Siddhima, and he got this name. Do people know? Gagan means limitless sky. I never heard her give any kind of name like that, and it really suits him because his imagination is, oh, right, imagination.
Hi.
Am I blocking you there?
No.
You're blocking.
I'm getting Duncan's lower thigh. It's good. Oh.
What's that like getting a name?
Well, because we came with Raghu, who's like grandson to these people, we just got taken in like family. And, you know, when we came to Kenshi, I mean, people came from, you know, 10 hours away. People came from all over the world to sit with Siddhima for 5 minutes and sit at her feet. Because we came with Raghu, and I'm not trying to start a tour company or anything here for Raghu, but she took us into her garden and sat with then Jocelyn and I. We got the transmission. I mean, when you know, for guys like you and I who are getting this kind of secondhand and get the hit and have the trust, you know, the complete trust in Raghu and Ramesh and Krishna Das and these guys, you start to see the rays of Maharaji coming through them. When I sat with Siddhima, it was like the sun was in front of us. I mean, you know, my wife and I have talked about it a lot since then. I have a diary of kind of everything she said to us, but it's really, you know, something special. When she gave me that name, I mean, it's funny because when Jocelyn and I fight, it's Jocelyn and Jared fighting. when we're one, when we're love, it's Jyoti and Gagan.
That's cool. How do they do it? Like, how does she do it? Did she say, is there a ceremony or how does it organically just happen?
I said, Jared wants a name, Ma. Something like that, right?
Kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It was like, it was on the, when I flew in, you give him $50, you get a name, it's great. You go home, you're enlightened, boom, done.
Can you talk a little? I'm sorry, I know you have a question for
no,
I'm just fascinated by the being around people like that because we hear so much about them. What leading up to it, before you met her, were you feeling anything? Was it in your dreams? Did you have some kind of, did you feel like you were being drawn into something? And when you finally got around her, can you describe what her movements were like or what she was like?
Well, the movements that I remember most, to be honest, was when we went to her house and Raghu was playing harmonium and singing, what were you singing? Singing Ma Durga, and she was just tapping to Ma Durga, and you could see this just, it was like a little girl sitting up in the seat. She was kind of like sitting like this, and just, you know, playing while Raghu was, you know, singing the harmonium. I mean, it really brings me back there right now just thinking about it. But, you know, she's got this light where, you know, when someone just gives you the flick of an eye, you just get a little bit of the iris looking in, and it just pierces you. I mean, that mala ceremony with Ram Dass, that's the kind of feeling. You know, Ma and Ram Dass are like brother-sister. I mean, that's kind of how it seems like they refer to each other. Do you feel like they get the same, you know, a similar transmission?
Oh, it's different. I mean, it's different because it's mother. Mother makes it completely different. Completely different from Maharaji. And it's a little difficult because when he left, literally, before he left, when he was alive, she did not come out, and we never knew her, except through the window in the back of a door. I knew who she was, and we'd have glimpses of her, but she and Jivanti Ma, her sidekick, always stayed in the back. And then when he left, she came out front, and then she started telling us everything that went on that we had no idea about. Maharaji would go in the back room and say, oh, yeah, today Krishna Das came, and I gave him 50 rupees to get a drum or something like that. I mean, not quite. So then she became a mother, like a real mother, aside from Maharaji had, she was known to us to be a... like Durga, you know. So that's why when I sang that particular kirtan to Durga, it was just to her. So there is that relationship of, but then there's also just like family, mother.
But there's also, and I'm curious on your thoughts on this, because what I had leading up to it, maybe this is what you're getting to, is like this immense sense of butterflies. Like this had been made into this huge, I've been reading Ram Dass since my cousin gave me mushrooms and Be Here Now when I was like 13, and told me to figure it out. And then, you know, and now I'm here. But, when I got there and, you know, you sit with Raghu, you sit with these guys and you just get the love and the feeling and their immense, you know, faith, that's the word I had for it then, now surrender more to, you know, Maharaji in one. And so you get this all built up, and I'm such like a, you know, I'm more of an intellectual guy. Like when Krishna Das was talking about guiones and devotees the other day, I'm on that guione path, you know, so I was wondering as I was leading up to it, like how much of this am I just building up psychologically in me for this to be this like big enlightening experience, you know, where I was going to take off when I got to meet her. And then when I got in the room and it was like climax, you know, I'm sitting there with her and I'm looking at her and how much of this am I building up in my own head? Then I've got that skeptic on my shoulder, that kind of spy, you know, Sharon calls it like the spy consciousness, you know, watching me from my shoulder and kind of like, is this me doing this? Is this the transmission from her? So that's what I've been struggling with is like, and this next generation who doesn't get it direct from source, but gets it through. Do you feel any of that? Like when you, as do you consider yourself, you know, devotee to Maharaji? And what's kind of the?
Oh God, I wish I had that kind of confidence, man. It's so weird. Like I'm so generally insecure that as much as I would love the idea to be a devotee, it'd be really cool. Man, I'm 90% certain. What is it he says when he tells people to go away?
Jiao.
I'm 90% certain if I ran into him, he'd be like, Jiao, go, get out of here. What are you doing? That's sort of how I feel. So, and I don't know why. No, that's ridiculous. Probably a waste of time.
Total.
I've had a ton of experiences with him. Crazy experiences. And I have this spy on my shoulder too. I almost every single time I'm like, well, that's because you ate medical marijuana. Well, that's because you were on mushrooms. That's because you were, well, those are basically the two reasons. But you know, I can remember once, I was walking my dog. I mean, this is such a weird story. I hope you guys will forgive me. The fact that I'm saying it is so weird, but I was walking my dog down by the LA River. And I'd been thinking a lot about the ego and, you know, I get angry sometimes. So I've been thinking a lot about my anger. And I have this picture of Maharaji there. And like Raghu had recently told me, oh, you know, you can pray to him. And I remember when you told me you can talk to him.
You can pray.
I translated into prayer. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. I'm never going to do that. And then I was talking to him, saying, can you help me with this, anger thing? I've got this anger problem. So I'm walking by the LA River and I pass this couple. This man and a woman, this older man and woman. And my dog starts barking at the man, just barking. Ah! And I remember the man like looks at my dog with this beautiful smile, like smiles at my dog. My dog stopped barking. I'm walking down the alley. I'm like, who was that guy? I've seen that guy before. I'm like, oh, holy. I'm trying not to curse. That was Maharaji. That looked exactly like Maharaji. And then, you know, of course, I turned around. They're like long gone. It's like, oh, my God. What was that? Because after, you know, after that, I've been thinking like, oh, the way he smiled at the anger. And it's like, oh, just smile at it. Love it. There's the teaching embodied in that thing. Now, was that really Maharaji? No. Couldn't have been. No way. He didn't teleport to Atwater Village, to the LA River, to smile at my dog from the afterlife. No. But the...
No. The, you know that.
What's that?
You know that for sure?
I don't know it for sure.
Oh, okay.
But I'm 99.9% certain that that was not a ghost.
What about... We have a friend who was taking a bus in London while he was still in a body, right? And a man got on the bus and sat down beside her. He was so compelling, but she suddenly just did that. And it turns out she didn't know it at the time. It's a beautiful man, and he just contacted. She would have to look away and back and forth and got off the bus. Next thing she knows, somebody gives her a Be Here Now, and there's Maharaji. She goes to India, okay, sees Maharaji. I don't know what he said to her, but it was something like, nice bus ride, whatever.
Right.
Okay, she knew. He told her to make her know that, yes, that was it. So why can't it be this?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. This is what I've come to realize. Does it matter? That's the question. Does it matter? If it was real, if it wasn't, does it matter? And I think it's a really important question because, you know, Roshi Joan was talking about how this is a reflection of ourselves. This is a reflection of the deepest love inside of us. This is a reflection of our full potentiality. And, you know, how often do you hear these annoying debates about the historic Jesus? Was he real? Did he do miracles? I saw this ridiculous documentary on, here's how he could have walked on water. They were like, some Christian scientist was trying to explain, like, maybe like he generated some kind of thing with his feet. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. It's like you're missing the entire point when you get caught up in that stuff. And by you, I mean me. I don't think it matters. I think that what does matter is that you can use this symbol as a mechanism to see the parts of yourself that are shut down or closed off and the potential of how much you can really love. And if it's real, wonderful. Thank God. It's amazing we exist in a universe where beings like this incarnate and do miracles from time to time and then vanish. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. But if it's not real, that doesn't diminish the feeling that I have gotten from being around you guys.
If it wasn't him, because the thing was real. Whatever happened to you was real.
Right. And I've noticed that, and I think that's part of this path, is that you start recognizing that the whole thing's a teaching.
Yeah.
That even your own doubt is teaching you. Even your own doubt is the same form of resistance, just to try to desperately escape from being overwhelmed by whatever this is.
Yeah, I mean, it would be easier if you had the magic trick in front of you. That's part of the path. You know, finding the faith, finding the surrender without that, you know, trick, bob over the head, dive, whatever you want to call it, for us to come onto the path and find that surrender, find that faith. I mean, I sat in, you know, KK's house with you and KK and fought about this for 5 hours.
Yeah.
And Raghu just keeps looking at me and saying, just surrender. just surrender. And, you know, I'm overthinking it. It's just you keep overthinking, you keep, you know, plowing that field and saying, okay, but if that exists. The fact of the matter is, like you said, with Jesus, you know, how many millions of people have done amazing things in the name of Jesus, have made their lives better, whatever the religion is. You know, when someone mentions Jesus, then they find out I'm Jewish. They're like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, I love Jesus. What are you talking about? You know, I think the symbol, like you said, it's that symbol, that faith that bring people to do better things with their life, to find, you know, purpose in their life is really finding that surrender into, you know, Maharaji Jesus, the one, whatever you want to call it.
None of us were any different than anybody when we went to India. The reason why, I mean, when Ram Dass came back and he said, this is what happened to me with this being, of course, the way that he said, just like now, everybody here, you know, you just, the gravita of who he is lends a trust and ultimately a faith. And that's what we had. I mean, Ramesh and, I mean, the people you've met, Krishna Das, Badrinath, who's here, just absolutely trusted that. And then we went over, we had the same kind of mind warp go on, absolutely the same. And it took time for that to, you know, to dissipate. And what's being, the tools that are being given here now are pretty incredible versus what we might have had then and the speed at which you can get them. And one of the things we were going to talk about, which I want to get to, is what Ram Dass talks about imagination. You know, he says, you can talk to, I talk to Maharaji in my imagination, and then it becomes real, he says. So we had a little bit of a dialectic about that, and we thought, well, let's talk about it here. What does imagination, in that sense, mean to you?
Well, it was, I think our conversation was, how have you guys heard when Ram Dass talks about, you know, people say, oh, so you talk to your guru. He's like, yeah, it's in my imagination. And he sees that as one, you know, with Maharaj. It doesn't matter if it's within Ram Dass. It's one. It's all together. So that's what I think that the dialogue started at, was when Ram Dass says he's talking to Maharaji in his imagination. Is he really talking to Maharaji? Is he talking to himself, and does it matter?
I think what, and we've never really discussed this, Ram Dass and I, it's probably worthy of a discussion from his point of view, but I do believe it's the imagination is the instigator, because, and this is what I said to him, you have a thought of Maharaji, you have a picture, and you, and mentally, you're just sitting there talking to him about whatever. And the deeper that you go, the place from which you're talking to him changes from your mind into a much more intuitive place, which, you know, he calls soul, spiritual heart, whatever. And from that place, something else happens that's not so mental. It's nothing to do with that. And then it sort of fits in with what you just said, which is that's a reality of a conversation that happens with deep down in yourself, because Maharaji is God, Guru, and Self are one, said Ramana Maharshi. What does it mean to you, the imagination thing?
Well, you know, this is really cool. I'm actually reading, I'm going to mispronounce his name. I'm sure someone here knows how to pronounce it. Teilhard de Chardin. Do you guys know I'm talking? Have you ever heard of Teilhard? So
Teilhard de
Chardin. He's amazing. And one of the things that he talks about is how science has managed to, you know, map the outer verse, you know, and we've got probes on Mars right now. We've got incredible telescopes that are, you know, evolving so rapidly that we're going to be able to peer, you know, we can even now like peer back to almost the Big Bang, you know, with science. It's incredible. But science has yet to send one probe into the inner verse. Like, there's no way to send a Cassini. There's no way to send a Hubble into what's going on in the interior of the human consciousness. There's no way to do it through science. So because of that, this inner verse gets kind of negated, not because it's not real, but it's just like, how do we measure it? How do you measure an imaginary conversation with Neem Karoli Baba? How do we gauge that? How does that work? There's no way. It's such a uncharted terrain that the only way you can go there is through art. The only way you can go there is through spirituality. The only way you can go there is through conversations like this. So one thing's for certain. If you're talking to Neem Karoli Baba in your mind, that's really happening. There is a definite 100% thing that is happening. And if you ask yourself, well, what is this thing that's happening? Well, the things that's happening is that you, which is the very crest of the wave of time, manifesting as a human being, and if you consider just that, this perfect harmony of atoms and all the things that are inside of us, you know, all the bacteria, all the other forms of life that make us function, if you consider this thing, which is the universe experiencing itself, is at this very moment using the most advanced computer known in the universe, which is the human mind, to manifest this vision of a being and have this communication. That's definitely, definitely happening. So is the thing you're speaking with real? Yeah, it's definitely real. It's 100% real. It's a miracle that's happening there. Is it Maharaji? I don't know. I have no idea, and I don't, and I think you know, and you guys feel confident that it is, and I'm willing to believe that it is. But again, I think that for me, it's like, well, it doesn't really matter. You know, when you have a nice DMT trip, one of the first things you think to yourself is, for those of you guys who haven't done that,
try ayahuasca instead.
Well, ayahuasca is DMT,
except for one of the. Is it completely the same? I think there's one molecule.
Yeah, it's an MAO inhibitor that... ayahuasca is two things. One of them's an MAO inhibitor. The other one's dimethyltryptamine, and it allows it to pass the blood-brain barrier. It just lasts longer because it's gone through your stomach.
You know, so this from Joe Rogan told you this?
Yeah, and some personal research. But yeah... But the point is, you know, if you've had that experience, one thing that you immediately think, and it's an endless subject of debate, is this something that I'm seeing inside my mind? Has somehow this chemical unlocked something in my mind that is allowing me to witness the most incredible, impossible, beautiful geometries, a universe teeming with life, extra-dimensional entities, and the sense of having some transcendent consciousness blasting me with love? Is this something happening within my mind, or is this something happening outside that I've been unaware of or haven't been able to witness? And I guess the real question is, what is the inside and what is the outside anyway? You know, because the inside is the outside, isn't it? The inside and the outside are the exact same thing. There is no inside or outside. There's just this one moment that, for whatever reason, from time to time, has manifested thought forms that look like Neem Karoli Baba, and it has conversations with it. And whatever that is, if you could figure it out, then I will ask you for a name.
Give him a name, please. Just give him a name, and then he'll shut up about this shit.
I'm naming myself.
Dimethyltryptamine Baba?
I was thinking Mai Tai Das.
Yeah, that's more like it. All right, you've gone off deep end. Now, I want to bring up somebody else now to give us a little bit of a different point of view for our last few minutes here. And it's going to be my beautiful wife, Saraswati Marcus. Come on up. We just have to get a view from goddess side rather than working man, everyday working man, scientist over here. Actually, what's proved interesting is your guys, kind of your perspective on being a different generation, having a relationship with Maharaji and what that might be. You've expressed it. Now we're gonna ask you to express it.
What am I expressing?
Sit down. Okay, so we want, my love, we want your point of view about meeting Maharaji through, and you just tell a little bit of your story, how you did meet him, and these guys were both expressing their relationship with him at this point. He said, absolutely, to consider myself a devotee of Maharaji, you'd be crazy. I'm so not worthy of that.
Insecure.
And,
Insecure.
Insecure. Here's Insecure. And over here is Mr. Gyan. I need to think about this a little bit more.
I think he said Gyanis. And I was wondering, what are the Gyanis?
No, he meant Gyan.
Let's go with Gyan.
Yeah, I think so.
No, I thought Gyanis was funny. I was like, oh. Yeah.
Like cojones.
It reminded me of that. I'm a bad person, too.
Okay, let's get on with your story.
But what I think is interesting about Gyan is that it means knowledge, or right, the path of wisdom, but also it's the same word, how we use knowledge, it has the K-N, so it's not knowledge, it's knowledge, and the same with jnana, it's sort of like a jnana. Anyway, I just find that interesting. Does anyone else find that interesting? It's interesting, right? Thank you, Davey. I have one supporter. But before, can I just say one other thing about, or you looked at me like no.
Yeah, no, go, please.
All right, just really quickly, I was just thinking when you were talking, Duncan, about the imagination and, you know, trying to look at the inside and how can you frame out something that can't be measured? If it can't be measured, then that equals it doesn't exist, I think is really a problem with the question. So that's what struck me, that it, you know, that we have to move away from this more mechanistic, like this thing is a machine, reductionistic view. And so.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But this, that's what I've been raised in. I mean, that's the,
we've all been raised.
So it's like a heavy duty bit of conditioning, which is that anything that cannot be repeated or anything that cannot be proven scientifically is something that you're supposed to be immensely, deeply skeptical of. And I think that becomes a problem sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes it definitely keeps you from... It's like, imagine if before you went diving into the ocean, you had to, you know, have thousands of measurements that you had to take. And you probably know that story of like... I'm sorry, I don't mean to hijack this. You know the story of Buddha... The Buddhist story of the king who gets hit with the arrow. You know that story?
I do.
Can you tell that story so I don't have to seem like such a yappy jerk?
I can't tell it well. I'm not a great storyteller. But the gist of the story is that, you know, if we are happen to be somewhere and we are struck by an arrow, that we would encounter pain. Is that fair? Right? If you're struck by an arrow, you'd have pain. So we don't really have so much choice around pain of the first arrow, but we have some relationships. We can have a conversation. We have a choice about whether or not we accept a second arrow. And the second arrow is usually the way we feel about the first arrow. You know, that, oh, I was stupid to be walking in that place, or I should have been looking around so I would be able to protect myself, or I should, you know, I deserved that arrow, you know? And so you have the pain of the first one, and then the second arrow is all the things. And
that is a good, better story. The story I was thinking of, though, very quickly, a king's walking, because it relates to that part of our mind that's like, come on, what is this? How do I measure it? How do I identify it? So there's this great Buddhist story. Forgive me if you've heard it. A king is walking in the woods, is hit with an arrow, is laying on the ground. He's got an arrow sticking out of him. And one of his attendants comes and says, here, let me help you get this arrow out. And the king's like, no, are you kidding? someone that we could be ambushed right now. Someone could be trying to, there could be another attack. Scan the forest and find out who shot the arrow. And then, and so he brings back, they go out and find a hunter. And they bring that, and the hunter's like, I'm so sorry, it was an accident. I didn't mean to hate you with this arrow. And they're like, well, can we take the arrow out now? And the king, at this point in the story, I don't really understand it, but for whatever reason, the king is like, well, I must know what kind of wood the arrow is made out of. And then, of course, it's what kind of, what bird did the feathers come from? What was the steel at the tip of the arrow? The king is asking all these ridiculous questions, and as in the midst of asking these, finally he just dies. And so is this story is supposed to relate to that part of the mind that is like, just, you know, just take the arrow out, dum-dum. We'll figure it out later. But, and I think that any bona fide spiritual path or vehicle, which is what this certainly is a means to get the arrow out. And the longer you consider the specifics and intricacies of it, probably the longer you're putting off extinguishing that pain that you are talking right. about.
But how many, everyone was here yesterday when Duncan was talking about building the house on the edge of the diving board. How many people feel like that? How many people resonated with that story? Yeah, I resonated with that. You know, it seems really easy to pull the arrow out. I mean, it's easier, right? There's like some philosopher, I forget who it was, Leibniz or something, that basically said, just believe in God. Because if you believe in God and there is a God, you're saved. If there's not, you're in the same position. If you don't believe in God, you're fucked either way.
Yeah.
So you might as well just believe in God.
Maharaji said that. I love saying that.
Okay, I still want to hear from you about your relationship. Talking about people who never met him in the body. Mm-hmm. And
I'm just not quite sure what to, you know... So, like, how did I come to know Maharaji?
No, what is your... We talked about insecure relationship and a Gyani kind of feeling out relationship.
Yeah. I mean, my experience has been much more like a process of feeling much more connected and then that thinning out to some degree where I feel maybe less connected. And then something happens that points me back towards, you know, feeling something. I mean, the times where I feel all on my own are really uncomfortable. But I was talking to somebody recently, and I was saying those times have become, they don't worry me so much as they used to. When I feel alone or when things thin out, that is, the connection thins out for whatever reason. Could be just I'm hungry, you know? It's not like, it doesn't have to be something earth-shattering. It could be I didn't get enough sleep or, you know, just, you know... Or it could be that I'm not doing the practices that I know help keep me hooked in, you know, to something more real that I don't need to measure. That actually to measure it would cheapen it because it's like the fact that we can't measure it makes it valuable. It's like that, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's sort of like giving $50 to get a name, you know, it's sort of like, you know, So I think I'm just balancing out. There was a lot of talking, so I'm just like, I'm a little quieter. I'm trying to remember what I was going to say. Just about when it feels thinned out, I less frantically try to rearrange the outside of my life. That's really what. Things have evolved. I used to, okay, I got to change my career path. I've just got to make more money. Oops, I've got to change my relationship. Oh, okay, maybe I'll buy another pair of shoes, the same shoes. I'm going to buy them in a different color or whatever it is. I've less frantically rearranged that, my outsides.
You know, it actually, what you're saying too, is something you and I and Sharon talked about before, but it relates to purpose a little bit. And, you know, different people find purpose in different parts of their lives. I mean, a lot of people, you know, I came out of the music industry. I know you did too, which is like a, you know, a shithole of a business, and you're not happy with yourself. I mean, even when you're successful, you're not happy with yourself because, you know, you go in these meetings and you got to take a shower when you get out of it. It's like disgusting.
And I wasn't in that part of the
Oh, right, sure. Business. I'm sure the Kirtan business was...
It wasn't Kirtan business, but everyone was a delight on our side.
Sure. In my side of the business, everyone was not a delight. I was having trouble, you know, finding purpose in my work. I mean, I was making a lot of money in one side, and then I was, you know, carrying out some philanthropic stuff on the other. Like, I love your story about the bags the other day. You know, it's kind of like you can do your podcast, stuff like that, and then you can go out and you can do good things. That's, my life was a dichotomy. So I was working over here, making money, taking care of family, and then over here, giving back in some way. And really, when I started to fill that hole, was when I integrated those two things. Was when they came together, and it wasn't just about the dichotomy, but it started to integrate into one. And like you're doing with your podcast, I'd say both, you know, all of you guys, but specifically you two, spreading this consciousness to people who don't usually get it. That's a very purposeful, you know, that's needed. This is like saving people. So I also think that. You know, what you were saying as well, when you have that purpose, you don't veer as much off the path. Like, you handle challenges with grace, you know? So some of what you were saying, where it's a little easier, you're a little more flexible when it comes in, when the challenges come. When you've got that purpose, you know, and I was talking about work just now, but you were talking about spiritually, and there's purpose and meaning in each of those paths. So Maharaji, I think, being that kind of North Star, that purpose, that meaning, whatever, your practice, you don't get bumped off as fast, you know.
Okay, I don't know if I'd call it purpose, and I was really going to extend it as the basic trust. And you can, you know, and then that moves to faith, which involves surrender. But the basic trust, and I've been talking about this all weekend individually and from here, when Ram Dass came back, and you heard Krishnadas talk about it, and Ramesh, when he came there and he said what he said, we had a basic trust in him that this, that love was real. And we knew that. And obviously, and we did a podcast yesterday with Krishnadas. At one point he said, I've been doing this for decades and I'm still fucked up. Right? Remember that? We were like, yeah. And he was like, oh my God, that's the greatest thing I ever heard. If you're still screwed up, then... And he also said, but I am not jumping into this stuff, just like Saraswati just said. I'm not propagating it. I'm not chasing it. It's a different relationship, exactly what you just said, that it's unhandled with grace is a great phrase for that. And that's because of that basic trust, which turns into faith. And it's not in an external Maharaji. It's in that which is deep inside of us, which, tell me if there's one person here who in the last two nights, these kirtans have really, really taken off. At the end of the kirtan, when he does that chalisa and into the Sitaram Shri Ram, is there anyone here who wasn't right? I mean, to some degree, I mean, I'm saying in both nights, I was completely, utterly in that essence of, and not thinking about anything, and not, when is it over? When is it going to start? Nothing, which was nothing more or less than when I sat personally with Maharaji in that same place. That happened the last two nights. I mean, am I crazy, or is anybody else feeling the same thing? I mean, and this isn't, I feel like a cheerleader now. You better say something, okay? But I'm just that, I experience, like, if I go to, there's a Hanuman Murti in Taos, which is Maharaji's ashram in America. And every time I walk in that room and just sit with that Murti, which, and I'm not, I went to India, I'm not into any of Maharaji's Murtis in any of those places. I'm not into idols. But a couple have struck me, this being one of them. Because when I sit there, that same essence of sitting with Maharaji or sitting with a satsang and doing kirtan, and suddenly there's a moment when there's absolutely nothing. That is what we're talking about. And the rest of life, and in terms of relation to Maharaji, is that basic trust, which turns into faith, that it's all okay. And so you're not reacting to, you're reacting with grace, which I love that. So in that sense, that's what Dada was talking about. And he saw it in these people, that they had this grace. And, you know, mind is mind. I mean, Maharaji would do miracles. And you'd still go, yeah, well, that's good. I need another one tomorrow. You know, tell me something else that I didn't know about. I mean, and wasn't, you know, it was extraordinary how much the mind will never end. You'll never, I mean, what in the Bible, Christ said, lest you see miracles, right? And we were living that.
Wait, you have to finish the verse. You can't just go.
Okay, you do it. I'm not Christian.
I don't know the verse. Lest you see miracles, buh, 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 buh.
Okay, who's a Christian here? Somebody finish this. Rita, you know it.
No one knows that verse, Roger.
Really? Okay, I'm going to look it up and I'll... Oh, okay. There you go. Thank you. That's it, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. And I think that's an important thing because what everyone's about to go diving back into is tomorrow. And tomorrow means going to the airport and the plane lands and you're back in traffic and you're back at work and you're back and you're not in Hawaii anymore. Maybe you are. But my experience after these retreats has been that there is a really interesting crash that can happen where suddenly you're, instead of being around all of this, all these beautiful people and all this love and sweetness and support, you're around a lot of walking calluses and a lot of people who aren't very interested in hearing about your great spiritual retreat in Maui. One of my friends already said to me, you can't call it a retreat if you keep going back to it. You're there all the time. But so I think that it's really important to learn to forget about all the miracles and to forget about the magic and forget about the synchronicities and forget about any of that stuff. If it happens, fantastic. But the big teaching that I get from you guys is being able to see how Maharaji, or the energy behind Maharaji, is everything. And that you're constantly in Maharaji's blanket. You're constantly surrounded by love. And that these people, you know, it's literally everyone. It's your dog, it's your boss, it's your mind telling you this can't possibly be real. It's the sorrow. The entire spectrum is like every single thing is the smoke rising off of the incense at the eternal puja table that is Maharaji. And I think that once you start recognizing that stuff, everything turns into a miracle, right?
You are absolutely correct. You are now graduated to a devotee, okay?
Hey, awesome!
And that's the end of our show, as they say, because that's a beautiful note to end on. And really, thank you. Actually, thank you for that. That was absolutely. We're going to transcribe that and put that out on ramdas.org.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody, for showing up. Thanks to Gagan Saraswati Devi. And I really want to give you a name.
Give me one.
I got it next December.
Okay, great.
December, it's coming. I'm going to talk to Ram Dass about it.
Cool.
Okay, see you all later. See you tonight.